Thank you, Ms. Tadros and Dr. Ducro. We'll now move to the interventions. Before we start, I would like to remind interveners that we have allocated 10 minutes for each oral presentation, and I would appreciate your assistance in helping us to maintain that schedule. Your more detailed written submission has already been read and will be duly considered. There will be time for questions from me after each presentation, and no time limit has been ascribed for the question period. The first presentation is by the concerned citizens of Renfrew County and area, as outlined in CMD 19-H100.5 and 19-H100.5A. Dr. Hendrickson, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Madam President, for this opportunity. I do have a very short presentation. I'm Ole Hendrickson, researcher with Concerned Citizens of Renfrew County and area. We're located in the upper Ottawa Valley, and one of our main concerns has been management of waste and prevention of pollution at the Chalk River Laboratories. So why would our group care about a small slowpoke reactor in Saskatoon, thousands of kilometers away? Most of the waste from that reactor, from the decommissioning, would be sent, will be probably, to the Chalk River Laboratories. So the long-term management considerations will fall to the managers of that facility. Also, reactor decommissioning is becoming a very important matter in Canada. The federal government alone has six medium-sized, I would say, shut-down nuclear reactors awaiting decommissioning, two of which are at Chalk River. So how decommissioning proceeds, how the CNSC manages decommissioning is becoming a priority. And I am a bit concerned that we're hearing from the licensing and compliance of reactor division, and one wonders why CNSC doesn't have a decommissioning and waste specialist here today to talk about reactor decommissioning. So, as we've heard already, in part, the fate of the waste from the Saskatoon SRC would be the slowpoke. Most of the radioactivity would be contained in the nuclear fuel and would be shipped to the Savannah River site, has been already apparently. The beryllium reflector assembly would go to Chalk River. That has the second most highest level of radiation. And then there's some other, there's a lower reactor container, an upper reactor container. And as we just heard, there's the concrete reactor pool, which has some radiation in it, and that would be buried on site if it presumably passes the clearance levels. And also we discussed the discharge of the reactor pool water to the municipal sewer in Saskatoon. This is probably familiar to some, but just very briefly, radioactive waste 101, the splitting of U-235 and also plutonium-239 releases neutrons and alpha particles. And so you get new actinides in the fuel, isotopes of neptunium, americium, plutonium, and so forth. But the largest number of waste radionuclides comes from the fission of U-235 and plutonium-239. The slowpoke decommissioning waste management plan lists fully 191 fission products. And some of the major ones are cesium-137, strontium-90, yttrium-90, barium-137M. And one of our concerns that maybe hasn't been fully taken on board is the activation products that come from the release of neutrons from U-235 and plutonium-239, which cause normally non-radioactive isotopes such as cobalt-59, iron-54, nickel-62, which are components of metal, and some of the things in the concrete to become radioactive. And some of those actually are fairly long-lived. Some of the problematic ones that would likely be found in the concrete reactor pool, and certainly there's a lot of research in other countries that show this, such as Denmark, where I think they take reactor decommissioning very seriously, and they have a very active research program in the university there, which we seem to be lacking in Canada. Tritium, of course, is a major activation product with its 12.3-year half-life, and carbon-14 with its 5,700-year half-life, chlorine-36 with a 300,000-year half-life, calcium-41 with a roughly 100,000-year half-life. And another major activation product, which just came to my attention today, actually, I was looking again through the decommissioning and waste management plans, is nickel-59. Nickel-58 is the most abundant isotope of nickel. So, and nickel is used to make stainless steel. There are even forms of rebar that contains stainless steel. I don't know what kind of rebar was used in the concrete pool of the SRC reactor. Probably not stainless steel rebar, probably just ordinary carbon steel rebar, but certainly there are stainless steel components of the SRC slowpoke that would have large amounts of nickel-58, which would be activated to nickel-59, which has a 75,000-year half-life. So these are problematic isotopes. These are mobile. These are isotopes that these are all essential elements, with the potential exception of chlorine, but certainly tritium, hydrogen, carbon, calcium, and nickel. So you don't want to leave them on site. You don't want to entomb them in concrete. And you, I know that I read the dispositioning of my comments about this, and the dispositioning document says that these are not being ignored, but instead a matrix is being used to determine the amounts, and they've been assessed via calculation methods. I would suggest that assessing long-lived radionuclides by calculation methods is unacceptable. Either SRC and or SNC-Lavalin or CANDU Energy should make actual measurements of these long-lived radionuclides to ensure that whatever is left behind in that concrete pool is below clearance levels. And I know that the dispositioning of my documents also talks about the measurement of the radionuclides in the materials that will be shipped to Chalk River. And again, if we don't have transparent and well-documented assessments of not just what is estimated to be in the waste that would be shipped to Chalk River, but actual documented measurements, then I think we may be doing future generations a disservice by leaving them with wastes for which we simply don't know what's in them. And we certainly at this point only have licensed storage facilities at Chalk River and no final disposal plan. So my concern is that we're moving into quite a number of decommissioning projects that are going to be larger than the slow pokes. such as Douglas Point, Jeanne T1, the Rofton Reactor, the NRX and NRU at Chalk River. And we don't have a robust regulatory system to determine what kind of wastes are in these decommissioned reactors, in the metal, the concrete, and how to manage these properly over the long term. We're tearing them down and we're shipping them, but we don't know what we're going to do in future with them. When I read the detailed decommissioning plan, the focus is very much on the gamma emissions from the waste transport containers. Now, that's of course important for the public. It's important for the workers that are transporting the waste, the workers that are putting the waste into containers. But in terms of the long-term fate of these wastes, we need to know more. We need to know about the alpha emitters. We need to know how much of the actinides are in there. We need to know about the long-lived beta emitters. And some of these things, like calcium 41 and nickel 59, they're not emitting beta particles. They're decaying by electron capture, and then they may be emitting weak X-rays, or in the case of nickel 59, it can actually emit some gamma on a rare basis. So if we don't have good evidence that these radionuclides that are very long lived have been properly measured, and we're not studying their potential mobility in the environment, their toxicity to humans, but we're doing future generations a disservice. So when I see that this is a Saskatchewan Research Council reactor, it's been operating well for quite a number of years. They've done a lot of even environmental work. I think the Research Council has a bit of a responsibility to look after the waste. So who is the waste owner? We hear that the waste owner under the federal radiation, what's it called? The radioactive waste policy framework. Under that framework, the waste owner is responsible for decommissioning and waste management. So Saskatchewan Research Council pays Canadian Nuclear Laboratories a fee for waste management. Yes, that's true. So the waste gets shipped to CRL and CNL gets a fee. But then who becomes the waste owner? Who's the waste owner once the waste arrives at Chalk River? This is unclear to me. But the likelihood is, since CNL is only a contractor working for Atomic Energy of Canada Limited, that the waste owner de facto is going to become the people of Canada. So we're accumulating wastes from small reactors like the SRC Slowpoke, but potentially in future from much larger reactors, including reactors owned by the federal government, owned by AECL, and we do not have a long-term plan, acceptable plan for the management of the waste arising. And this is imposing an unacceptable burden on future generations. And this is why in our recommendations, we say, slow down, let's have a better look at this and perhaps defer decommissioning of this reactor until we have a better handle on the wastes arising. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So let me start off with maybe an easier question to staff. So who is the owner of the waste once it's arrived at CNL?
Haiti Tatters, for the record, we do have our specialists in decommissioning and waste management here to support staff in answering the detailed questions, and I would like to pass this one over to Ms. Nancy Greencorn.
For the record, Shirley Al with the Waste and Decommissioning Division. The waste that is the decommissioning waste that would be transferred to Chalk River Laboratories becomes the owner. The Chalk River Laboratories becomes the owner of that waste.
Thank you. So, Dr. Hendrickson, that was your first question's answered.
That begs the question: who owns Chalk River Laboratory?
We'll get into that. So we do have decommissioning and waste specialists here. The title of the waste goes to Chalk River Laboratories. So the other question, and you've have raised this a number of times, is around the potential inadequate characterization of the waste as well as what may be left behind. And I'd like maybe staff to start off with the different radionuclides that Dr. Hendrickson mentions that are probably hard to measure, but they are long-lived, they're mobile, hazardous. What's your comment on that, and how can we get reassured that the waste is indeed adequately characterized?
Dr. Carolyn Ducro, for the record. Before I pass it back to our specialists in this area, I'd just like to clarify that in a decommissioning plan, part of what SRC are going to be doing, and they can speak to this in more detail, is when they take samples of the concrete in the most contaminated areas and moving out in a circular way, that concrete will actually be removed to the impermeable seal level, so it won't be in the pool and grouted over. So for the more precise answer in terms of the radionuclides, I'll pass it back to the specialists.
Maybe I'll make some comments on this. So the while as far as we know, it is true that some of the radionuclides are assessed in a matrix, and they're really the result of a calculation. Once the waste is actually shipped, it is characterized, and perhaps SRC may want to comment on that. But if we look at, we'll take for example the U of A decommissioning project, the end state report lists the has the record of all the waste shipped and characterization. So and perhaps on that I'll let SRC.
Okay, SRC can elaborate on how the waste will be characterized.
Thank you. I'm going to pass elements of this question across to CANDU Energy, who are our subcontractor, who are will be performing the decommissioning. I think it is important to note and just reiterate that those components of the concrete wall and bottom of the pool, as we said before, will be actually removed, leaving only residual concrete in the pool that is below the regulatory limits. So there will be nothing that is buried within that cement that is above the regulatory limits. What I will do with regards to the characterization of the material that will be transported to Chalk River, I'll pass that across to our colleagues at CANDU Energy.
This is CANDU Energy. My name is Shahzad Alam. I will pass this question to our radiation physics specialist, Imelda.
Excuse me, can you speak louder or be closer to the speakers, because we barely can hear you. Thank you.
Okay, this is Shahzad Alam from CANDU Energy, and I will pass this question to Imelda. She's our radiation physics specialist.
Thank you, Sasha. This is Imelda Ariani from CANDU Energy. So it is true that a lot of radionuclides that are potentially be present in the, for example, the concrete pool and components in there. Most of them we estimated using the state-of-the-art industry standard tool computational code, and we did perform measurement to confirm the validity of the estimate using several of the nuclides. They're not complete, it is understood, and however, the one that have been measured contributed more than 99% of the caution with respect to the unconditional release limit. So nucleides that were mentioned, such as nickel 59 and tritium, calcium 41, those also were estimated, but the estimated concentration is very, very low, and we are confident that even if we are confident that our assumption in the estimation are valid, and based on the measurements that were done through other nucleides and the tool set that we used to perform the estimation, the cross section that we used to estimate the production, etc. So since the level is very, very low versus the unconditional release limit, then there is no chance for that nuclide to exceed the limit that has been imposed on that specific nuclide.
Thank you. I'll turn to staff again to provide clarification. So these radionuclides that have been mentioned are never really measured. Actually, it's always based on estimation and then some modeling to confirm that the levels are low.
Correct. These are not gamma emitters. These are very difficult to measure nuclides.
So how does one get confidence on exactly what the levels are? I'll ask CNSC staff to comment on that.
Haiti Tadros, for the record. So yes, I believe your question has always been in terms of characterization of waste. How do we ensure the radionuclides that are in question are verified and looked at? So I believe our specialists who do look at the requirements around waste characterization can take this answer. With regards to the nuclear substance and radiation device regulations, the schedule that staff do quote, for the purposes of the Act and for the purposes of determining what is risk significant and what is not, those amounts are used. And when the specific radionuclide is not found there, as per CNSC staff's disposition, they are grouped in terms of their characterization and their characteristics to ensure that those levels remain below what is in regulations. So I just wanted to underline and underscore what the importance of that schedule in our regulations represents. So for waste characterization, what is looked at, I will pass it back to our specialists in waste management and decommissioning.
Shirley Au with the Waste and Decommissioning Division. SRC's decommissioning waste will be characterized in accordance with the waste receiver's acceptance criteria. So in this case, it would be Chalk River Laboratories. The Chalk River Laboratories waste characterization is prepared in accordance with CSA N292.0, which is on the management of radioactive waste and spent fuel. CNSC has reviewed Chalk River's waste characterization documentation. As we know, Chalk River has a license to possess, manage, and store radioactive waste, and CNSC staff have found that the waste characterization program and documents to be acceptable.
SRC, you said you looked at a number of decommissioning options. Did you look at removing the pool totally?
Mike Crabtree, SRC. Again, that would be CANDU Energy. I'll pass that across.
Yeah, this is Shahzad Alim from CANDU Energy. Removing the pool is not very clear what the question is. Pool is not like above ground. It is sitting inside below ground, and removing the whole pool, what that would mean.
So you will have read a number of interveners have raised concerns about partial decommissioning. I think the current intervener, Dr. Hendrickson, also, I think, uses the term partial decommissioning. Others have used entombment because there's a part of the old reactor, the pool's concrete structure, that is expected to be left behind. I know you're saying whatever's contaminated will be taken out and only what's clean will be left behind. I'm just asking, was the option of removing, even though it's underground, removing it in its entirety considered?
Yes, it is considered. What the general practice and in decommissioning is, when we're doing final surveys, we survey every square inch of the reactor facility. Wherever there is contamination beyond the clearance, unconditional clearance levels, it is selectively removed. And the same principle is applied to the reactor pool as well. Removing concrete unnecessarily, just because it is part of a reactor building and thinking that it is contaminated is not the practice which can be done. So it's measured, it's assessed, and then only then we remove, which is beyond the unconditional release limits. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Getting back to the question around title of the waste, and I guess the underlying issue here is, if CNL's final disposition or disposal costs skyrocket, what is SRC's liability once the title of the waste has been transferred to them? Any long-term liability that SRC would still hold? You look a bit puzzled. Is it because you don't understand the question? I can try again.
No, in the sense that we understand our long-term liability, our medium long-term liability under the current policy and regulations. And we have provision of funds to manage that. Should there be a change in that, that would be a regulatory and policy change of which we don't have any control over.
The intervener's comment was, well, why not have deferred decommissioning until CNL has a long-term waste solution in place? And what I read implicit in that is, by you transferring your waste before CNL has this long-term solution, there isn't full certainty as to what the costs will be for the long-term disposal of this waste. And as a result, I know you've got your decommissioning funds and a financial guarantee, but once the waste has been transferred from SRC to CNL and the title has transferred for the waste, do you still hold any long-term liability for that waste?
Mike Crabtree, no, the answer to that is once they have taken title, we have no further long-term liability. Thank you.
Mr. Hendrickson, any comments on what you've heard?
Thank you, Madam. The surveys that would have been done for the University of Alberta slowpoke after the decommissioning would have been gamma surveys, so they would not detect non-gamma emitters, some of the long-lived radionuclides that might still be present in the concrete. So that sort of procedure would seem unacceptable in terms of long-term public health. And I certainly also want to emphasize the fact that nickel 59 would not be just a trace waste component. It would be probably a major component of the metal that would be shipped to Chalk River. And again, it's one that you cannot measure with a gamma survey. So unless that is being properly characterized, then we're going to be stuck with a 75,000 year half-life element that is part of a lot of enzymes in our bodies that is soluble to some extent in water. So I would emphasize that nickel 59 is one of those isotopes that it's not the concrete I'm worried about. It's the waste that shipped the Chalk River and its long-term fate.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll move to the next intervener then. Thank you. The next presentation is by the National Council of Women of Canada as outlined in CMD 19-H100.2. I understand that Ms. Gracia James will make this presentation by teleconference. Ms. James, are you on the phone?
Am I on?
Yes, you're on. Over to you.
I didn't dress it at the last minute. I'm away from all noise. Anyway, good afternoon. And with the National Council of Women of Canada, I'm their environment vice president. And we have significant interest in and we have strong precautionary policies regarding the life cycle and the activities of nuclear power, such as the decommissioning and waste management, particularly their potential to harm the public and worker health and safety and the environment. And in this regard, our policy advocates for strong regulatory oversight, as well as independent expert input and public participation in related hearings. Therefore, we commend the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission for responding favorably to requests by the public sector groups such as Canadian Environmental Law and the Concerned Citizens of Renfrew County and North Watch for a public hearing on this application. Our immediate concerns with the decommissioning application are, and this has been discussed quite well now by the citizens of Renfrew County person, the planned in-situ burial and abandonment of a portion of the residual concrete in the pool, given that in 2018, CNSC allowed the University of Alberta slowpoke reactor to be filled with concrete and abandoned, although portions of the reactor were still radioactive. Any acceptance that cores from the reactor pool floor have met clearance levels when these will not include the measurements of long-lived, hard-to-measure radioactive substances. And that's been discussed as well, and we agree with these previous comments that were made. The planned in-situ abandonment of the reactor pool with no institutional control required, despite the above-noted concerns. The chemical and radiological dangers to workers from beryllium oxide dust as the reactor is decommissioned. And, for example, the decommissioning of both the University of Dalhousie and the University of Toronto reported there were events where decommissioning staff received excessive doses of radiation during the removal of beryllium reflectors. No matter that to us that these have been removed, these reactor beryllium, but these kinds of things do happen, and we always have to look, we feel, to the worst-case scenario. The collective radiation dose for this application is higher than that allowed for the Alberta slowpoke. The plans for unconditional release into municipal landfills as much waste as possible and the processing of radioactive waste from the reactor pool and its release into the municipal sewage system, given the difficulties municipalities are having with their waste management, including sewage systems. And I realize that they're supposed to be purified, but I'm not quite sure what that purified, how that works and how effective it is. Finally, while it is commendable that this slowpoke reactor is being decommissioned, it is essential that no part of the core be abandoned. Its radioactive waste should not be placed in any municipal landfills or released into the municipal sewage system. Rather, using good stewardship, it should be safely stored and retrievable well away from waterways, sensitive natural systems, populated areas, and be under human control. To conclude, we're not against decommissioning, but feel it must be carried out safely using precautionary principles to strictly protect workers, communities, and the environment. And in partial response to CNSC staff comments on our submission, we reiterate that our concerns were also raised by several other groups, and we also bring to the Commission's attention the following issues. With the entombment of even a portion of this reactor pool, there is a potential for ongoing excess radiation in adjoining buildings, as found in the U of T 2000 decommissioning. Alpha radiation is hard to detect and can lead to very dangerous internal exposure for workers. This happened at the Bruce nuclear site when they were working on the nuclear steam generators. we draw your, oh, and if in case there, the purification doesn't work for the sewer system and such, we note that sewer systems across Canada have recently been shown to be seriously inadequate and releasing pollutants regularly, and we doubt that it could handle radioactive materials. We draw your attention to the recent CNSC regulation and transportation of liquid high-level nuclear waste containing highly enriched uranium from Chalk River through my area of Niagara and into the United States using the same regulatory standards and cautions as solid nuclear waste. In other words, liquid is not the same as solid. We all know that. It goes into the groundwater. It burns at a higher temperature. It's quite different, and yet it was treated by all the CNSC staff, by the government itself, as being solid waste, and so it was not a problem. So we feel strongly that there is no harm and much to be gained from previous mistakes in slowpoke nuclear reactor decommissioning, and much can be learned from the gaps, inaccuracies, and recommendations for improvements presented in the public interest by commenting agencies. Therefore, we urge the Commission to ensure these are filled and corrected before a license to decommission is granted. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. James. There are a number of concerns and comments that have been raised, and maybe I'll start off with staff with the first question, where and Ms. James isn't the only intervener who's raised this, that when it came to the University of Alberta slowpoke reactor, that it had been abandoned with portions of the reactor still radioactive. Can you comment on that, please?
Dr. Carolyn Ducro, for the record. I'll pass this to the project officer in a moment. I just wanted to clarify that it's a requirement in the in-state report that lessons learned are documented, and this has to be done in accordance with the CSA N294 for decommissioning of nuclear reactors, and also in Reg Doc 2.11.2 for decommissioning. Those any lessons learned were taken by the contractor, and they can speak a little bit more about how they incorporated that into their plan. But
so my question wasn't around lessons learned. I'll get to that in a moment.
Okay.
The question was very much around the Alberta slowpoke reactor, and was that abandoned with the reactor still radioactive?
Pierre Tanguay, for the record. I believe the concern may arise from statements that were in the in past documents and one of the CND that we submitted, CNSC staff submitted for the abandonment, which stated that some portions of the reactor had elevated fields, and these were extremely marginally elevated, something like a 0.54 microsievert compared to the acceptance level of 0.5 microsievert. And I will point out that this is not a regulatory limit. The regulatory limit when it comes to I'll say abandoning or letting go, clearing the concrete pool or the material is takes from the Nuclear Substances and Radiation Devices Regulations Schedule 2, which are levels expressed in terms of becquerels per gram. And as far as our assessment of the U of A application, the entire pool met those clearance levels.
So Heidi Tadish, for the record, I'd just like to bring us back to this notion and this terminology that is used in terms of abandonment. And the terminology is not appropriate to be used in this case. That terminology is internationally known, and that terminology refers to a whole of reactor being left behind. This is not the case that is happening here for SRC, nor was it the case for what was happening at University of Alberta. These reactors are being decommissioned. These reactors are being decontaminated. These reactors are being surveyed to ensure that the list of radionuclides that are present from activation are below the unconditional clearance levels that are provided for in the regulations. And if they are not below those levels, the grout is not used, the grout does not come into play, the pool is cleaned, the concrete walls of the pool are removed, that is the requirement, because they cannot leave behind material that has contaminated the concrete. So when we look to some of these interventions, the concerns being raised are around levels and values of surveys that were used by the applicant or by the licensee at the time to do their surveys. There is a margin of error around those values, and we need to kind of focus in on there is no risk provided for between a value of 0.5 and 0.54. And those were preliminary values that were submitted that were later then used to determine where the contamination was and removed. So there is no abandonment, there is no leaving behind or entombment of any radionuclides in the pool that we would accept or that we would allow the licensees to do.
So thank you for that clarification. So let me repeat back to make sure that I've understood you right. If 0.5 microcuries per hour, or was it per hour? What's the unit?
Tadros, for the record, it is 0.5 microsieverts per hour. That is a dose rate.
So, right. If 0.5 microsieverts per hour is what would be acceptable to meet the clearance level requirements, if what was measured, because there are only five measurements that are being taken, if what's being measured is 0.54, then the expectation is that there'll be decontamination or removal of whatever's causing those higher fields so that you get below 0.5 microcuries per hour. Am I correct?
That is
microsieverts per hour.
Heidi Tadros, for the record, that is correct in terms of ensuring that the levels that are obtained from a dose rate perspective, and dose rates are established to ensure protection of the workers and the public. So once that level is reached, the regulatory level is reached, more cleanup is required to bring it down to that level.
And I can tell you, and I can see why the interveners would be confused, because the material that I have seen in the CMDs and from staff CMDs, that was not as clear as it could be. And even in the earlier responses, it wasn't as clear as it is. That was a preliminary measurement that then resulted in decontamination taking place or removal of the concrete, so that at no time any material that exceeded the 0.5 microsieverts per hour was left behind. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So, Ms. James, I'll turn to you. Does that give you reassurance as far as addressing your first concern?
It does, to a degree. I guess I had another point in there about the measurements themselves and some clarification, as some of the radiological dangers are not easy to measure. And so as if I could be assured that was the case, but is there absolutely a need to be leaving anything behind? I realize it's economic, and at the other end, it's a private sector that is doing the end work along with ACL's help, and I think Ontario Power. If that's going to make them money, I would prefer to just have it all taken out away, so that we don't have to worry about whether it's 0.5 or whether there's something there we missed, and then that would be complete. I mean, this has done its work there. It's been good work, and it's finished. But why bother leaving it so that there can be danger there? Just because, and I think this is a just because, I know it's a regulation too, but that you meet that or below it. But I think that it should be taken away. It's no longer being used for this good purpose. It can be taken somewhere. It can be buried safely. It can be managed safely once we find a proper place to put all of this, and hopefully not all up on the near the Ottawa River. Anyway, that's my answer to that. Thank you.
Thank you. So we did. I mean, I had asked that question when we had our earlier intervener, and we did get a response from CANDU Energy on that. Another question or concern raised by Ms. Janes is why no institutional control? So maybe staff, just for the record, if you can just explain why it's not necessary in this particular case, please.
Shirley Au for the record for the Waste and Decommissioning Division. There is no need for institutional control in this case because the decommissioning strategy that's chosen is immediate decommissioning, and it'll be completely decommissioned. Therefore, it would be clean to the levels of for clearance, and no CNSC regulatory control is required.
Thank you. And now Dr. Ducro is coming to you around lessons learned, but I really will ask CANDU Energy on this, and it's particularly around beryllium oxide dust and hazards associated with that and events that have happened at previous Slowpoke decommissioning projects. So maybe CANDU Energy, you can explain to us what were the key lessons learned and how have you incorporated them for the SRC reactor?
Okay, this is for record Shahzad Alam from CANDU Energy. There was the first slowpoke reactor that was decommissioned in University of Toronto back in the year 2000. There was an issue of beryllium, but not beryllium oxide. Beryllium oxide is a chemical which is poisonous, and if somebody inhales,